Hello and welcome to the I Hear Design podcast, your source for interior design and architecture news, interviews, and opinions. I'm your host, Robert Nieminen, and as I'm recording this segment, we're already a month into the new year, and there's been lots of reports coming across my desk about the state of commercial design and construction projects and what's ahead for the industry. There seems to be some consensus between various forecasts from the industry's leading sources, like the American Institute of Architects, Dodge Construction Network, and S&P Global, for example, that project 2024 being relatively flat in terms of non-residential building projects compared to a more robust 2023. There are bright spots, of course, such as healthcare, institutional projects, and education, for example. It appears there'll be some headwinds to face early on, but there are reasons for design and building professionals to remain positive. In its annual design forecast, global architecture and design firm Gensler identified 8 key trends at play that will help move the industry forward in 2024 and beyond. Stranded assets like offices are being rethought and retooled into residential spaces to help with the housing crisis, for example, and leveraging technologies like AI and creating more engaging experiences will continue to reshape the built environment for the better. I recently sat down with Gensler co-CEO Diane Hoskins to discuss how design can solve a complex set of challenges that design practitioners face today, and to review the firm's 2024 design forecast report to better understand what's behind the 8 trends it uncovered. There's a lot to unpack, so let's jump right in. So hi, Diane. Welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Hey, Robert. How are you? It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you. Anyway, I'm really excited to have you on the podcast because I recently had a chance to preview Gensler's 2024 design forecast. And I have to say it's chock full of really insightful information that we'll spend some time unpacking in this episode. But before we get to that, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and the work that you do at Gensler and maybe a personal detail or two, like how you got in the industry or favorite architect, author, favorite travel destination? Just take your pick.
Thank you so much. As I said, yeah. Robert, it's so great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to join you. So Diane Hoskins and, you know, I have been co-CEO of Gensler for almost 20 years. I know 20 years is long, but also being a co-CEO often is like, wow, you know, and we can talk about that maybe at some point in the program. Sure. But yeah, you know, I'm from Chicago originally, again, the cold spot, but also the sort of home of great architecture, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, that's really what motivates me. Look, I love what this platform is all about, I plus S, because it's that intersection between design and purpose.
Yes.
And that's really what jazzes me about architecture and design is that, yeah, you know, I love art and I loved art from the beginning, you know, when I was a kid, but I loved this idea of purpose being brought to something that we create. And, you know, we're going to get into this a little bit as we get into design forecast, but, this core of purpose and how much that is a part of architecture. It's the power of design itself. And, you know, ultimately for me, that's really what, you know, my career has been about. And frankly, that's what Gensler has really focused on for, you know, since 1965 when our firm was founded.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's so well said. And thank you so much. I mean, I know that to your point, I mean, design and architecture is all about design with intent and with purpose behind it. And I know that a lot of the research that Gensler does as a firm goes to making those informed design decisions, right, that impact the clients, it impacts the planet. And so I'm really eager to dive into some of this information in this latest design forecast. So this is an annual report, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I know Gensler has been reporting on these design trends for quite a while now, and we've featured a couple of episodes in years past on some of this R&D that you all do. And this latest report, of course, covers a broad range of topics that will impact the design industry in the years ahead. So to kick off our conversation, Diane, I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about the scope of this year's report and maybe what's changed since last year's forecast. Like, have you seen any significant shifts since the last iteration?
Absolutely. And you touched on it, you know, a forecast is really about trends, about what we're seeing, that there's enough kind of signposts and signals that we believe that this is really telling us that things are changing. And, you know, more than ever, things are changing quickly because of, you know, post-COVID, but also so many other dynamics economically and so forth that are driving change. And so the fact that, you know, we're seeing things this year that are much stronger as indicators of, you know, that we are in times of transformation. This year's design forecast is really all about the power of design and its ability to create solutions for, frankly, complex challenges that I don't care what project it is. Some of these complex challenges outside your doors, outside all of our doors, is affecting that project and how design actually can help to create solutions that offer optimism and positive change. You know, our 2024 design forecast also reflects the transformation that we've been experiencing as a firm as well. So as we're designing, as we're meeting the challenges of the world outside of our doors, it also has an impact on what we offer, the kind of design we're doing, and where we are actually working. And, you know, again, this year we've seen our platform grow to new cities. We have actually started to see more work in certain areas like industrial and logistics, in mobility and transportation, in entertainment, build-to-suits, headquarters, and even things like airports are growing right now within our practice.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so good to hear because I know there's been so much uncertainty, as I think you touched on, just, you know, with the economy, and there's challenges everywhere. But I think there's also some pretty interesting opportunities that I think we'll talk about as we get more into the, you know, results of the report. And speaking of which, so the forecast identifies 8 key trends that will shape design going into this year and into the years ahead. So at a bit of a higher level, can you identify these trends for our listeners and maybe a couple of the drivers behind them?
Yeah, the 8 trends shaping design in 2024 are the most important signals and key opportunities in the building design industry today. And our report reveals trends that are shaping the industry, including one that everyone's talking about right now, which is AI. And, you know, the fact that we see AI as having huge potential to accelerate ideas and innovations. A lot of people are talking about how it's going to, you know, change their workforce, or how, you know, something happens in one company and, you know, eliminating jobs or creating jobs. Well, in design and the built environment, we see it as a real accelerant to be able to study new types of solutions faster and to get to those great ideas much more quickly on projects. We also are seeing how we can transform our cities. You know, this idea of moving from districts across our cities that are mono-use, or this is just where the houses are, or this is the place where the offices are, to this idea of mixed use. And frankly, in all of our research, that's what we're seeing that people are looking for. You know, 24/7 neighborhoods, places where the residences aren't far from the downtown, and where you're able to really have a life that is maybe within 20 minutes of all the right. different that you normally would go to. And then this whole idea of sustainable design as a non-negotiable, and we can talk more about that as well. But, you know, going from something that was a little more esoteric to something that was, well, you know, icing on the cake, to something now that is being seen as, you know, foundational and fundamental, really, to any project.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you for highlighting a few of those trends. And I'd like to drill down a little bit deeper into a handful of them that I think would be most relevant to our listeners in particular. And so one of the ones that that's jumped out at me as I kind of previewed the report was this idea of experience multipliers that you called it. Can you talk a little bit about what's meant by that term specifically and how designers can leverage that concept across different project types?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is really an exciting concept. I mean, the idea that, you know, using what we would call immersive design, design that really touches your senses on lots of different levels that drive, frankly, you know, a whole different level of experience. And how we're seeing that if, you know, if places offer inspiration, education, social opportunities, F&B, as well as those kind of have to from a transactional standpoint, that it creates loyalty, it increases the economic viability of areas, improves vibrancy, and a sense of belonging that people have to places like that, whether it's a store, whether it's a district, whether it's the building that you work in that has these kind of qualities. And this is really pivotal because right now we're at a moment when people are craving visceral, connected experiences in environments and, you know, in an authentic way, not, you know, this kind of pasted on Disneyland, but something that is truly authentic. And a lot of this is, you know, we saw the reaction that we all had to being locked down or, you know, again, not being able to be with other people during COVID, that a real sense of valuing those kind of places has really, it's really something we are seeing, whether we're designing a workplace, an airport, an entertainment venue, you know, a basic, you know, city or district layout, that it's about how do you create multiple types of touch points, experiences, from education to inspiration to, you know, socializing opportunities for opportunities to be, you know, again, alone and with as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, we're turning single purpose buildings into multimodal buildings and spaces. And, you know, a workplace, transforming it to be more like a clubhouse or a place that brings people together in community, or a sports stadium that anchors 24/7 mixed use entertainment beyond its doors to create more of an entertainment district as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, because I know in years probably ahead of even COVID, you know, we're hearing about, you know, immersive design and experiential design. And I think, at least in my mind, there, you know, part of that was like just integrating more technology and people would be immersed in a space. But that's not necessarily what it sounds like what you're saying. I mean, even though that might be part of it, but it's really about, I think, to your point, creating those authentic experiences and multi-layered maybe design. Does that sound about right?
Absolutely. You said it really well, that it's, again, it's not just about putting screens up. Mm-hmm. And actually we created a tool called the Experience Index, if I can go sideways for half a minute.
Sure.
And, you know, some of this data is actually on our website, where we interviewed people in a whole array of different types of places and experiences, really understanding what kinds of places created the kinds of experiences that, you know, they found positive, that they wanted to be in more often. Right. And what I thought, I mean, all of the data is fascinating, but to just sort of synopsize around retail as an example, you know, we all think of, well, a store is to go and buy something. But the data that we got back from people, again, in retail environments was the best retail environments that they wanted to spend time in are retail environments that are, frankly, less about the transaction and more about whether it's inspiration, education, social experiences, F&B. You know, again, yes, the transaction is in there, but it's less than 50% of the why.
Wow.
And at the same time, we found that the transaction is more likely if the other experience types are there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting. Another thing that we've been hearing a lot about, I think, in recent years is about, especially since, you know, the COVID and pandemic lockdowns, is about stranded assets in the commercial real estate market and how building owners are just really struggling to fill vacancies in those buildings. What are some key considerations, would you say, that architects and designers need to keep in mind as they convert some of these stranded office spaces into residences or mixed use facilities that you were just describing?
Yeah, I mean, that term, stranded asset, I think all of us started hearing that a few years ago, and the noise has gotten louder and louder about this issue, and it's gotten to be more and more of a reality in so many of our cities. And it's our, you know, shopping centers, it's office buildings, and frankly, you know, the biggest conversation right now is the vacancy that we're seeing in office buildings, especially in our major markets. And what happens when that vacancy level goes up is it actually diminishes the value of even the full office buildings, because now they are devalued along with the devaluation of the empty buildings. So it's a serious issue for the building owners, but also for those cities. And what we're finding is that there's a real potential opportunity, a real upside opportunity. If we look at those buildings as a place to put uses that are needed, frankly, you know, where there's not enough of something, let's put it in these offices where we've got too much of something. Right. So, you know, again, we don't have enough residential. We don't have enough housing. So that is a really important assessment and a really important momentum that's going on right now. So in, you know, 2020, literally, Gensler created an algorithm that we started using, which can, you know, a building owner comes to us, my building's empty, what can I do with it? And we're able to use this algorithm to be able to assess if that building can it become a viable multi-unit residential building. Mm-hmm. Every building cannot do that, right? I mean, some buildings, because of their shape, because of the way the loading dock works, because of various things, it's not going to be a candidate for this kind of transition. So we've assessed over 1,000 of these projects now across North America. And we have found that roughly 25% of the buildings that we have assessed have the feasibility to become, a residential project. And 25%, you know, doesn't sound like a large number, but with 100 billion square feet of commercial real estate in the U.S.
Yes.
You know, if we just converted 5% of that, that would be 6 million homes. I mean, think about that, right? Mm. The opportunity is huge as we are facing this, you know, housing shortage in so many places. So, you know, we are very excited about this work. We're very intentionally leaning into this because there are communities all over the U.S. that are hurting. Mm. And even the federal government has brought us in to help them to figure out what kind of incentives that they're going to put on the table to help communities meet the gap, if there's a gap in terms of the cost to do this, but to be able to get this done for their communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels like it's like a dual benefit of you have these stranded workplace assets, but now they're being converted into communities, residences where, you know, there's a housing shortage. And so it's sort of a win-win, right? I mean, that's kind of how it feels anyway.
Absolutely. You know, this is what you're looking for, right? This amazing opportunity meets, you know, a dire problem. And I think that's what we're witnessing.
For sure. Yeah, that's great. Well, Diane, I wanted to circle back to the topic of sustainability and the characterization that, you know, sustainable design is a non-negotiable, which you mentioned earlier, which is in the report. And, you know, to me, when I first read that, I'm like, that sounds kind of more like an imperative than a trend, right? Like, is this an option? Like, this is just, we've got to do it. Was that intentional? And if so, like, how can architecture and design professionals ensure that they're not only, you know, doing their best to implement sustainable design principles at the highest level with their clients, but even within their own firms? Like, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. You know, it really was to say that, you know, we've gone from optionality to a requirement. And at the same time, I think there's a real value proposition there as well. And we can talk about that in this as also. But, you know, let's just go broadly. You know, climate action truly is, whether it's the moral imperative, but certainly the business imperative. And I would say even the personal imperative. I mean, all of us want, you know, beautiful, comfortable cities to live in. It's it's getting very personal, I feel. And that, you know, and definitely we want our children to be able to inherit the wonderful places that we all grew up in, you know, whether it's at the beach or, you know, the beautiful mountains. But it's important that we're creating a world that we want to live in as well as our children. So, you know, at the end of the day, it definitely is an imperative and it is non-negotiable. Just like, you know, we would all say about everything we create that it should be generative, constructive, and positive. And so, you know, decarbonizing the built environment, it really is a global priority because unlike, frankly, anything else out there, the scale of the built environment's impact on the environment is really the largest of any other ecosystem. 40%. Right. We look at, you know, transportation, it might be 30%. We look at other areas, farming, et cetera. None of them are 40%. So this is a big number. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we are able to do something. You know, we are able to create efficient buildings that have, if not net zero emissions, have close to zero, or as they were saying at COP28, near zero. Let's make mm-hmm. that the target, yeah. Which still goes a long, long way sure. from where we are today. So, you know, it's possible. It's doable. The challenge is that, you know, unlike the car industry where there's X number and there is a finite number of car manufacturers, we've got close to an infinite number of landowners, building owners, you know, financiers, et cetera. This is, we have a lot of players. So right. to get the momentum going in the building sector takes something different than in the transportation sector. However, with zoning, we're seeing people, you know, cities raise the bar like New York and others, but also as our industry, and you said this, so how does the A&D professional, we're actually one of the factors that touches so many of the others that we can offer the capabilities, the, you know, as we are doing in terms of our own standards being established on new types of specifications for carbon zero products being used on our projects, our industry actually can be a huge gatekeeper around what gets built and what doesn't get built and making sure that what gets built is going to be positive for our environment in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And that touches on that idea of design with purpose that we talked about in the beginning, right? I mean, just really the brand, we sort of adopted that that tagline because, you know, we have always felt that design does have the power to transform, you know, the built environment, but it positively impact people and the planet at the same time. And that's, you know, I don't know how, you know, how many other industries that can be said for as directly as it can for design. And so that's just something that's so powerful, you know, just the power of design to affect change. Right. And so just, you know, moving to our next question, we did talk a little bit earlier about offices as stranded assets and the future of the workplace has been something that's been, you know, topic of a lot of conversation, I think, in recent years, especially after the pandemic, you know, what's going to happen to the office. What does the Gensel report predict will happen to offices and how will it impact the work that architects and designers do in this market specifically?
Yes, it is such an important topic. And Design Forecast does spend quite a bit of time talking about offices, what is happening, what we're seeing in the future. You know, look, we believe that offices aren't going anywhere and for lots of reasons. Being able to work together is how organizations and companies have created unique cultures, have been able to create unique products, unique service offerings, to grow professionals, to grow leadership, and again, to become the great enterprises that they've become. As more organizations understand that the workplace and the landscape of the workplace has permanently changed. We're seeing changes like we saw going from maybe the workplace of the 60s and 70s to the 80s and 90s, you know, a significant step function change, you know, not a continuous change, but something that's more of a step function. Mm-hmm. But this change, we believe, is tremendously powerful. I mean, if you look at our data from pre-COVID, people were not satisfied with their workplaces pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, get, you know, there was, we had a report in 2013 that was just, you know, as dire as it could get about the state of the workplace and people being unable to focus and unable to find enough space to collaborate and lots of challenges, lots of issues, tons of noise, et cetera. So, you know, a lot of this response, albeit the work from home challenge, but really so much of this, we were kind of headed for something, you know, a showdown on the workplace. And right. here we are. But, you know, the shift we believe is about the how and why people come to the office. How does the workplace support people's needs? And the fact that today, and I would say even before COVID, people are conscious, very conscious of the contribution that the workplace can make and is making to their workday. And they're choosing to vote for this positive impact with their presence, or they're voting against it because they don't think that there's a positive impact. And yeah. so I think we've got to listen very intently and to really, you know, recognize that the answer is in listening to what people want and need. So what we're finding is that with these shifts that are happening, that the focus will move away from real estate metrics to people performance, that instead of a one size fits all, that it's about curated destinations. And really, again, as people are examining kind of what is working for them or what is missing from their day to day, there is definitely a lot more conversation that we're hearing moving from virtual to in-person because it's about the relationships. It's, again, people aren't talking about, can I get a task done? They're starting to realize it's about the relationships that I'm building. So going from open plans to degrees of openness, actually, frankly, in the workplaces we're designing today, we're putting in more privacy. Mm-hmm. Again, you look at that workplace from before COVID, you couldn't find a private spot anywhere. Well, right. that's coming back. Again, not in the 1980s form of huge offices and all of that, but real yeah. areas for privacy, for quietness, areas for that openness and collaboration, different types of work environments that, you know, suit different work styles and approaches. And also moving from static, monotonous office buildings to dynamic environments. Environments now, as we're working with building owners, we're putting in not just amenities, you know, for the sake of eye candy, but really literally amenities that mean something to the people that are working in that building.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been so interesting and great to see this shift, even though I think, I mean, to your point, prior to the pandemic, you know, we heard so much about the problem with the open office. And I was reading articles about, you know, is this the death of the open office? Because the pendulum felt like swung so far into open plan and people were just sort of trapped in the fishbowl. And then it feels like the pandemic just kind of accelerated this need for the privacy and the balance of space, you know, to your point, where people now just need different types of space to work and to make those connections when they need them and also the privacy. And so it's been really interesting to see that shift. And I think, you know, if there are silver linings to, you know, what we had gone through, with the shutdowns and everything, that to see the workplace evolving into something that's far more meaningful and useful for people has just been fantastic. So, you know, another point that I wanted to touch on here as we're starting to wind down our conversation, Diane, is this idea about AI. And I think you touched on it early on. You know, it really had dominated the conversation in 2023. I mean, we saw ChatGPT, other artificial intelligence platforms that really just kind of challenged how, you know, many industries work, including my own, you know, in publishing. But I think you mentioned that it's really accelerating, you know, kind of tools for designers, architects, even for writers, editors like myself. How would you say designers can harness AI to accelerate their ideas and innovation in 2024 and going into the future? Like, how are you all looking at this as a tool to leverage creativity and productivity?
Yeah, you know, it's design is an iterative process. And the ability, what we're finding is the AI tools, you know, that we're using are really helpful in visualizations. And so often a visualization just takes a ton of time to get it right. I mean, a day, 2 days, 3 days. With AI, we're able to get pretty good visualizations literally within minutes. And the point is not, gee, that's my project. It's, okay, now I can tweak this, I can tweak that. Let's try it this way, let's try it that way. That's design. Design is an iterative process. Often we run out of time before we can really get to the kind of shaping that the project would merit. But you run out of, you know, the schedule is so tight. Right. So in many ways, it is giving us back time to think, to analyze, to look at options. The opportunity for optionality and comparative analysis is unbelievable. That really powers design toward the kind of possibilities that would not have even been, you know, realistic given everything has to be done faster, everything, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like allowing us to, hopefully we're not going to get even shorter, you know, timelines, but in many ways, it's just giving us the opportunity to be able to do great work.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think we touched on the main points, the 8 key trends identified in the report. Diane, are there other highlights from the report that you want to point out for our listeners?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about all of these in depth. Yeah. And, you know, obviously the listeners should go online and check it all out. But, you know, we feel, again, some of the conversation around mixed use entertainment districts probably merits some underscoring. Mm-hmm. You know, we're really seeing in so many cities that, you know, this is truly the way that those cities are bringing back that energy, bringing that vitality back is mixed use. And, you know, it sounds like it's something new, but in reality, that's how all our cities started, right?
Right.
You know, amalgamation of some commercial, some residential, some retail, some entertainment. And that core, you know, ultimately got turned into much larger districts of sameness rather than the wonderful mix that really is what living in society is all about. We don't do one thing for our whole life. We do many things. And that's, again, what we're seeing as a huge trend right now. And all of these conversions that we were talking about that allows us to go back into existing product and bring back the mix that is going to create vitality. So it's actually a very exciting time as we're seeing, you know, this kind of re-energizing happening. Great examples of this, the AT&T Discovery District in Dallas, which we completed during COVID. And, you know, again, it's that energy of the mix of uses, great kind of entertainment experience, lots of amazing screens, but it's outdoors. It's also F&B. It's also in a commercial and residential district. And then the Hub on the Causeway is just a classic, wonderful, classic mixed use environment with shopping, with residential, with commercial, with, you know, again, a sports stadium, all the above in, you know, a great city that has really seen this as an incredible new vitality within that part of town.
That sounds so great. And you mentioned our listeners should go online to download a copy, find out more. Where can they go to do that? Do you have a URL you can point them to?
Sure. Gensler.com. You'll see Design Forecast right on the splash page, and you can look at other things on our website as well, but this is front and center.
Perfect. Okay. Last thing for you, Diane. I understand that you have co-written a book along with Gensler's co-CEO, Andy Cohen, titled Design for a Radically Changing World. Can you tell us about that book, when it'll be published, and how our listeners can get a copy of it?
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, we are very excited. You know, our first book coming out in about a month. So it's coming out in February, although you can pre-order on Amazon. But, you know, it's a unique book in that it's really speaking to two audiences. You know, first, speaking to designers and architects, really to remind us that our role has and has always been to be part of reimagining, re-envisioning, creating a better world. And that now more than ever, We need to engage with our communities, with our clients, as some of these tougher challenges are making, are, you know, creating complexity that really design can be an incredible tool to help to create that positive impact. So if, you know, design is one of our audiences, the other is really our clients and our communities, to understand that our role as designers is to be with them, not at the back end when they have already figured out what's the answer, but to be part of that exploration, to help them to envision what should be the strategy. What do we want this to be as we kind of look optimistically in the face of some tough challenges, you know, whether it's climate change or what's happening with, you know, some of the conflicts that we see in the world, whether it's wellness and issues of health. How do we look at that from a human-centered, optimistic point of view, using design, what we know from design, which is taking complex issues and bringing them together, and also being able to think about things in the long term, which, you know, is what design has to do, and being economical, efficient, but really asking that question, what kind of experience are we creating for people? And, you know, at the end of the day, how can we do this and have that great positive impact through design? So that's, you know, that's the why we wrote it. Again, we're using a lot of examples and helping to show people that this is real, and also that everyone has a role as we look at designing our cities and communities.
Yeah. That's so great. And congratulations on the launch of the book. It's so exciting. And I'm sure you and Andy are anxious for its release. I'm looking forward to giving it a read as well. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. Diane, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you and having you on the podcast. Thank you for being here and talking through the design forecast with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Robert. It's been a pleasure.
Well, for our listeners out there, once again, head over to Gensler's website to download a copy of the 2024 Design Forecast for a more in-depth look at the trends that you can expect to see in the design industry in the coming years that we just touched on today. And don't forget to head over to Amazon.com to order your copy of Design for a Radically Changing World. So thank you all for tuning in. And as always, be well, everyone.